Hello, everybody. This is Bill Knauer, and you're listening to Author to Author, where we talk about writing and life, because what it takes to write the book you want to write is also what it takes to lead the life you want to lead. Author to Author is brought to you by Author Magazine, the premier free writing magazine on the internet, featuring articles on writing and the writing life, as well as video and audio interviews with best-selling and award-winning authors across the genres. You can find Author Magazine at authormagazine.org. We just got a new issue up, although there were some internet issues or problems, but it's up now. It's good. It's intact. And we've got a great interview with the wonderful children's book author and illustrator, Nina Layden. She is one of a kind. So check it out. That is a great interview. And you can find it at authormagazine.org. We're also funded by the Pacific Northwest Writers Association, supporting writers from pen to publication since 1955. Our conference is coming up at the end of July here in SeaTac. All kinds of great stuff. Agents and editors, workshops galore. I'll be teaching an all-day workshop on Thursday, the first day of the conference, on memoir, four-hour masterclass on memoir, one of my favorite subjects. Robert Tagone is going to be teaching a masterclass. Donald Moss will be doing a masterclass on Sunday, a breakout novel. Oh, it's going to be good. So check it out at pnwa.org. So today's guest, well, somewhat unusual guest in certain ways. One way, not unusual at all. She's a former attorney. Nothing unusual about that. Boy, I could have an entire magazine dedicated to novelists who used to be lawyers. But she was not just your average lawyer. Back in the 90s, if you had a pulse, you might remember her as the lead district attorney, a prosecutor in the O.J. Simpson trial. I'm talking, of course, about Marcia Clark, who has since transitioned from the law to writing, first writing nonfiction, then fiction. She wrote the popular Rachel Knight series, and now for Thomas and Mercer, the wonderful Thomas and Mercer, she has begun a new series starting with Blood Defense, featuring the plucky and gritty defense attorney, Samantha Brinkman. Oh, I made a mess of it. Let's just talk to Marcia and see what she has to say about it. Marcia, how are you doing?
I'm good. How are you, Bill?
Fabulous. It's so good to have you on the show.
Oh, it's so
congratulations.
Good to be here. Thank you.
Well, thank you're welcome. So congratulations on novel number 5. How about that?
Oh, it makes me
you're
so
a novelist
happy.
Now.
Yeehaw.
What the hell happened? What happened?
You know,
what
actually,
happened, Marcia?
It was a childhood dream.
Seriously?
Yeah. Seriously.
All right,
seriously.
Wait. Stop. Stop.
Okay.
Stop. Okay.
Okay.
So it's a childhood dream. I've heard that before, and I think it's fantastic. But why consume so much of your time with the law first?
Because
why
I
not
had
just pursue
no
that
faith. I had no faith in my ability to earn a living as a writer.
Yeah.
I thought,
yep.
No.
That's a story. I know that story. Okay.
Yeah, right? And I like to live indoors. I'm one of those kind of guys. So.
All right.
So I went to law school.
Yeah, yeah.
And that's what
and
happened.
And then you found yourself in a strange, strange situation. We're not going to dwell on it. I'm not going to dwell on it. I don't care enough. But it the only reason I just want to touch on how that must have changed your outlook on some things. Because it's one thing to be a lawyer, but then you find yourself in the weird world of celebrity, really, and the law. And that must have shaken things up for you in a way that was really you couldn't turn back.
Yeah, it was so completely – it was an experience that was unprecedented, to be honest. You know, there had never been a case covered that way. And then really I thought, well, here, you know, after the trial, I thought, is that the way it's going to be in general? And no, not like that. Cases are covered, no question about it. We have, you know, all these outlets, these cable news outlets that thrive on them. But it's limited. It's, you know, you don't have that kind of intense scrutiny that we all went through. Certainly, you don't have the personal scrutiny on the lawyers that we went through. So it did not prove to be a harbinger of things to come. But it certainly was its own bizarro world at the time.
God, no kidding. But so, all right. So eventually you wrote a book based on that experience, a tell-all, I suppose, from your point of view. And you wrote that with the help of somebody else. And then you became sort of a on camera personality to some degree. Someone would, you know, you could be out and about doing the rounds, but eventually you decided to pursue that dream, that childhood dream of writing fiction. And was it fiction that was part of the dream?
Oh yeah. Oh, it was always crime.
It was always fiction.
Oh yeah. No, I was
crime
into making
fiction.
Up stories, crime stories when I was a little kid. And I mean,
really?
Little, like 5, 6 years old. Yeah.
Wow.
I was a weird kid.
Wow. Oh, that's interesting. No, yeah. No, that you weren't weird. You weren't weird for a writer. I'll tell you that. That is like, that is what they look like. So that's interesting. But what I would not have guessed. So you weren't just into fiction, but crime fiction.
Oh yeah.
I
always.
Oh.
Yeah. Always.
Well, how
so
ideal.
For me,
that
when
you...
I went to law school, it was a really easy choice to say, oh, it's going to be criminal law.
Right. Wow. Okay. All right. But now. So now you're going to make that. So but you didn't want to starve. You were afraid of this. You didn't want to play the top ramen in waiting tables when you wrote. So you wanted to do the law, and then you decided to write your first book. Now, what was that like for you emotionally to take that leap? Because I would think it's not just money, but also the question of, will anybody care? Will anybody want to read it? Can I do this?
Right,
because nobody's going to care that you're Marcia Clark when they pick up that book. Honestly, that's over.
No, you know the truth is, I think it was kind of a hindrance to me. I think people, and well, I don't think so. This is what I was actually told, so I'm taking it out of the realm of conjecture. Booksellers later told me after I published like the second or third Rachel Knight book. So I don't know if you know this, but there was a big pushback, and people were not willing to. One of them in particular said, "I read your book. I thought you were really good." And I was trying to hand sell you, and people had a reaction like, oh, another celebrity book? Forget it.
Right.
You know?
Right.
And, you know, now even more recently with Blood Defense, it was surprising the number of people who wrote in to say, you know, I really didn't expect anything, you know, another celebrity book.
Yeah.
And that means she probably doesn't know how to write. And I was, thank God, they said, pleasantly surprised. I loved her work, blah, blah, blah. But it took something. It was a hurdle to get over. It was certainly not... the big benefit that you would think, or some would think.
Well, that makes perfect sense, though. That makes perfect sense because, it's in fact, it's interesting. In the book, you talk about some of the weird obstacles that can get in the way of someone being found innocent. And you made one observation that if someone is too attractive, you describe a defendant who was so beautiful that the jury didn't like her. Either the men saw her as the unreachable and the women hated her. And it seems like the same sort of kind of weird mind games we play with the popular kids, so to speak.
You know, it's true, but I think there's a real basis for the public to feel that way because there have been so many books written by celebrities. Usually it's memoirs, though, not usually crime fiction. But in any case, books in general written by celebrities that aren't very good. And so they come away feeling like they got duped, you know. You would think that being a celebrity, they'd at least pick a good collaborator, but that isn't necessarily the case. So I think there is that kind of understandable reluctance to think that, you know, one translates to the other. The difference in my case, though, is that I was not an actress. I was not.
Right.
I was not a voluntary celebrity. It wasn't something I wanted to be. And as you've said so correctly, so many lawyers. Wind up being writers because being a lawyer, especially in criminal law, means being a storyteller.
Yes.
So
yes.
It's a natural segue.
It is. So I have thought about this and thought about this and thought about this because I've interviewed so many lawyers about why the link. But I think it's just that, somebody said there's a famous quote, which is you have the right to own your own opinion, but not the right to your own facts. But the truth is facts are less important than what we believe about those facts. Don't lawyers really tell stories about facts? That they use facts to back it up, but then you're trying to frame those facts in a way to tell their own story, right?
Exactly right. Exactly right.
Yeah.
It's all in the telling. So two lawyers can look at, especially on opposite sides of the courtroom, can take a set of facts, and the emphasis that you put on different aspects of those facts makes all the difference in the story.
And that's what you do as a writer. That's what you're doing as a novelist.
Exactly.
That
so,
is...
yeah, you know, I mean, I've had the experience of being both a criminal defense lawyer as well as a prosecutor. And I started as a defense lawyer, which most people don't know. And so that was a whole different mindset. And I'm actually doing defense work now on appeal. So that's why I think part of what motivated me, to do the Samantha Brinkman series based on a criminal defense lawyer is I wanted to play with the other side of the courtroom. People don't really get much opportunity to see the difference in the mindset between the prosecutor and the defense. It's completely, completely different, a different world, and really a lot of fun. And so, and Samantha in particular gave me the opportunity because I wanted to write a little more twisted character, somebody who was a little darker, you know. And and so that's a great combination for a defense lawyer to have.
So did you need to – what did you need to tell Marcia? I can't say her name without thinking about the Brady Bunch. I'm sorry. I'm going to just – I'm going to block out Marcia Brady. I just want to say Marcia, Marcia, Marcia. Okay, I'm not going to – there. I'm done with it. No. What did you have to tell Marcia to help her write that first book, that first novel? Was there a conversation you need to have with yourself? Or what did, are you just such a type A person you just plowed in and it didn't matter?
Well, I did both.
Okay, yeah.
Really, Bill, I did both. I was scared, you know.
Yeah.
At the same time, I wanted to so badly, and it was at this point in my life when I thought, if I'm ever going to realize the dream, it's got to be now or never. So I just kind of did it and made myself not look back, because if I stopped to think about what a disaster this could be, or the fact that no one would care, no one would want to read it, you know, if I stopped to think about all of that, I'd go crawl into a hole and, you know, get nothing done. So I had to push away, push through the fear, so to speak, and just sit down and write. And so I did.
Oh, you're a toughie, boy. It's good. It's one of the things I teach writing a lot. And one of the things I teach people is to, and it's an odd thing to teach, but I love doing it, is how to do what you just did, which is not think the thoughts that will stop them from doing what they want to do. Because a thought will stop you dead in your tracks if you listen to it for very long.
That's such good advice, Bill. It's such good advice.
Oh.
And especially because, you know, writing is all about thinking. And,
yes, it
is. And so your thoughts, you know, if there's one thing writers are very aware of is that the fact that thoughts have power. And, and bad thoughts, the wrong thoughts, can really screw you up.
That's right. My favorite, one of my favorite teachers is a woman named Byron Katie. And she famously said, the most dangerous thing in the world is a thought. And I think she's right. In fact, when I think about the law, when I think about criminals, although I have no experience like you do, and I'd be curious to hear your side of it, to some degree, crime seems like someone who's taken a thought and not questioned it and just followed it to its insane end, you know?
More often than not, that's exactly what it is. More often than not, it's an impulsive act. Gee, I want this. Let's go get it. And even when it's planned out, so to speak, it's not planned well. So,
yes.
Why they get caught, but I think that's absolutely true.
Now, I would think so one of the things I love about reading books like yours is the verisimilitude. I do enjoy what I can just feel is this is the way it actually happens quality to a book like yours. So I always enjoy that when I get a glimpse behind whether it's the military or law or restaurants or whatever it is. And so bravo, you brought all that to this book, at least from what I know about the law, which is nothing, but it seems it has that great sense of this is the way it actually happens. However, I would think it would be challenging as a former or still working attorney to have to deal with your desire to have things work out the way you want to in real life and say, well, I'll have them work out the way I want to in this book. Do you go through that at all? Like, oh, I wish this guy had been guilty or innocent, and I'll just have it work out here the way I want to. is that something that happens for you as a writer?
Sure. Yeah. You know, and I always think that accommodating that, first of all, thank you very much. I'm so glad it has the feeling of reality, because of course, the story is an amalgamation of life experiences, but there's a fair amount of fictionalization in it, of course. But what I want to do is, in the actual processing of the case, in the actual doing, I want you to be able to see how it would actually go. So, these are the steps in an investigation. This is what the defense attorney could do. This is what she could not ever do. And the cops, et cetera, and all that stuff. So I want that to be as real as it possibly can be. In the course of doing that, though, that means I have to deal with certain legal obstacles. You know, Samantha cannot just go up to somebody's house and demand that they talk to her. She can't make them do it.
Right.
She has no right to make them do it. By the way, neither can the prosecution, really, although they have a few more arrows in the quiver in terms of being able to charge somebody with obstruction of justice. But,
right.
but a defense attorney can't do that. You don't really have a threat to offer. So I think it makes you a better writer when you accommodate the obstacles of real life and show her being clever about getting around those obstacles. And,
right.
and it takes a little more doing, that's for sure. She's got to be smart. At one point, she and her investigator meet up with somebody who's a doper. And
mm-hmm.
And in order to get him to relax and talk to them, the investigator smokes a doobie with him.
right.
So,
well, you got to do what you got to do.
Exactly. You got to do what you got to do.
Well, yeah. And so, I would think you were a girl lost in her imagination, wanting to tell stories, hardworking, A student. I'm just guessing, but I'm going to guess you were an A student. Off she goes to college, and then you're in the world of Jesus, of people killing other people and stealing. And what was that like? Because that must have been so intense.
It really was. You know, it's a great question.
I can't imagine.
It really was. It was very intense. It was the initial years of working as a defense attorney. Though kind of slid me in slowly because I wound up, you know, you start with drunk driving and drug possession
right.
and prostitution, and those are like quote unquote soft crimes. But
right.
when you start moving into the big leagues, you wind up with murder, you know, and
yeah.
Some really ugly stuff. And it is initially a pretty big shocker, especially because from the defense side, you're sitting next to these guys. Or
yeah.
you're sitting across from them, you know, at a table.
Yeah.
I mean, it's, you know, you're not, this is not across the courtroom and being held in custody and handcuffs. This guy's,
yeah.
you know, in your office.
yeah. And
asking to borrow $50 so he can go get a gun so he can make your fee.
oh, God.
Yeah.
But see, that's interesting because as a lawyer, for the most part, you're going to have come from a world where you spent a lot of time with people like this until you became mm-hmm. their attorney. Unless, you
right.
know, there are some examples. But I would think as a writer, as a fiction writer, whether you write law or not, it would be invaluable because even though they probably have done some scummy things, my experience with human beings is I can always feel their humanity beneath all the garbage that they've heaped on top of it, you know,
mm-hmm.
in their lives and what the decisions they've made. But I would think it would give you a nuanced view of the criminal.
Mm-hmm.
In that you had to deal with them. You had to try to see them as possibly innocent, even when you probably believe this guy is so guilty. You know, it
yeah.
must have given you a glimpse behind the mask of the monster and the villain.
Yeah, you do. You know, when you represent these guys, you get to know them as simply flawed humans who most of them are not evil devils. Most of them are,
right.
you know, much more like Schlemiels.
Yeah.
You know, impulse challenged and usually yeah. underprivileged, you know, usually come from a pretty rough background and took the easy way out, so to speak. You know, snatch a purse
yeah.
instead of going to get a job. And that tends to be what you wind up with. On a rare
yeah.
occasion, though, you do wind up with a guy who is a really bad guy. Who, even
yeah.
if he had been raised in the best of circumstances, would have been a bad guy. And that's a
oh,
whole different experience. It's a whole different
yeah.
thing. But you do have, as a defense attorney, you have a mindset of, you know your clients are guilty. If you have half a brain and you really do
right.
have to be on top of this, you can't be a true believer because then you're going
right.
to do a lousy job. You have to go in realistically, look at the evidence, and assess because, you know, they're not going to tell you the truth. And, frankly, I never asked, you know, did you really do
oh.
it? It doesn't matter
right.
to me.
Right.
The question is the evidence enough to prove it?
Right.
And that's what you do. You really put the government to its test and make them prove the case, prove his guilt beyond a reasonable doubt. That's what you're there for. So it's a whole different kind of view, if you will. And so Samantha takes it to extremes because she's an
right.
extreme kind of gal in trying to find ways to raise a reasonable doubt. She's not looking for the proof positive that this guy did it or some other guy did it. She doesn't have to prove a thing because the defense
right.
doesn't have to.
That's right.
So she looks for the red herring.
So you obviously learned a lot in law, but now you start writing books. And What's the first thing that surprised you when you wrote your first novel that you wouldn't have predicted before you started it?
How hard it was.
Okay, so what was hard for you about it? What was hard? Describe hard to me. I've heard that before.
Yeah. I think, you know, coming up with a story, a premise that was strong enough and offered enough bends and turns and action to be interesting for the length of a novel and also deliver on the characters.
Yeah. Did you have trouble understanding how to create a kind of rounded character, or did that come intuitively to you?
You know, characters were easier for me for some reason. And maybe because they all stem in some way from my life experience. And, you know, whether I mean to or not, I'm sure not only me, but many people I've known come creeping into all these characters that I create for the novels. And so they were easier to think of. And possibly another reason it was easier is when I was in my teens, I studied acting for a while.
Uh-huh.
And part of acting is you must develop a backstory for your character. You have to know where they came from. You know, they didn't just spring on the stage fully grown. And so the exercise of doing that for 6 or 7 years gave me some experience in building a character out. So I'm sure that helped, too.
Sure.
So the characters weren't really,
No, go ahead.
Okay, the characters really weren't as big a challenge. Everything's a challenge. Like I said, it was hard. But coming up with the premise of the story that, frankly, I have to find it awfully intriguing because I'm going to be working on it for the better part of several months.
That's right.
So I better love it. And invariably by the end, I hate it. So.
Yeah, this is true. That's right. It can happen that way, but you got to start out loving it because I always liken it to a marriage or a relationship, which is there's going to be a moment. You might have the lust of the idea to start, but there's going to be a moment in the middle of it where you're like, I don't want to look at your face. I'm so sick of listening to you. But you've got to find that. You got to get through that because it was going to happen in every book where you think, I don't know what's coming next. This isn't making any sense. On and on. And if you don't have the love of the book, you're screwed.
You're totally screwed. You got to love it. You got to love the premise. And even though you know, after writing a few of them, you know that, you know, by the end of all the editing processes, you're probably going to never want to look at that book again. At least for the first few passes, you got to really love it.
I'm going to guess you're an outliner.
Yep.
I knew it. Well, that's all right. I can usually tell. But that's so. Did you outline from the get-go, or did you have to learn that you needed to outline?
No, I did from the get-go, and here's why. I actually started writing in Hollywood. I wound up as a consultant on a one-hour drama for Lifetime called For the People, and in the course of that, started writing scripts. And then the creator of the show and I went out and wrote pilots together and sold a few of them to various networks. And in the course of that, the television writing is very, you know, strict procedure, right?
Extremely,
and you're limited in length, right?
Yeah.
You have 55 pages, and you must deliver a certain number of act breaks, and it's very rigid that way. But what's cool is because they have this process where you have to go outline, beat sheet meaning a sheet that just gives you the action, one-line action, and then you fill in the dialogue, you know, that process really works to order your story, to set your story up in your mind, and then at least you're sure. By the time I get to the beat sheet, or in my case, in a book situation, it would be chapter. Each chapter has one line. You know, so chapter one, Samantha meets Xavier. Chapter two, Xavier forgets who she is or whatever, you know, like that. And that way I can focus. So each chapter is a scene. Scene. And when I get to the end of, say, 45, 50 chapters, that way I can see whether or not I have a story worth telling, whether it offers enough legs and enough intrigue and layers to be worth it.
Now, how often, Marcia, do you get it? You say, okay, you got your 45 one-sentence descriptions of your book. You say, okay, that's the story. That's a story.
Mm-hmm.
And then you start writing.
Mm-hmm.
And my experience, I can tell you I'm not an outliner, so, you know, there is that. But I've known in my own experience. Oh, totally. But, I mean, in my head, I think, boop, 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 boop. There is a little bit. I almost kind of do what you do on page in my head, but but really loosely. But what I experience is one sentence that I didn't predict can come along and things can change. Does that happen to you?
All the time.
Does it?
Yeah.
Yeah?
Oh, yeah,
ah,
all
okay.
the time.
That's
just
because
I have an outline.
It's good, Marcia.
Just because I have
good.
A beat sheet. Yeah, that doesn't mean, you know, I feel
good,
free
good.
To ignore myself all the time. So,
no, but you've got to. And I'm going to tell you, I'm going to give you writing advice, not that you need it, but I'm going to give it to you as much for you as for everyone listening, which is planning out is great, but your imagination, when it's really fired up, is going to give you something that you can't do in the planning, and it'll be gold. And you're and you deny yourself that if you stick too strictly to a plan that may or may not adhere to what your imagination really wants to give you.
Yeah, I agree
I
with
think
you.
It doesn't matter.
I totally
doesn't
agree
matter.
With you. For me, the outline format and the beat sheet format is a way of relaxing myself. It's kind of like my rabbit's foot, you know?
That's
if all
right.
else fails, right?
Yeah,
you know what I mean?
Right.
But then in the actual process of writing, as I do and I dive into chapter after chapter, I change things constantly. I never feel wedded to it, never. And I totally agree. You can't feel wedded to it because when you actually sit down and you drill down on that book and you're writing it page for page, you are going to – the synapses start firing. You start thinking of better things, and you have to let yourself go with those better things. So
absolutely.
Absolutely do. Yeah,
good
it's a great advice. You know, I mean, and for those people who feel that they would be wedded to the outline if they wrote one, they shouldn't write one. You know, I mean, it works for me for the reason that it does.
Yeah.
It's relaxing to me, you know, whatever. And whatever it takes to stop the nerves and get me to just focus on the book is worth doing. So I do it.
Yeah,
but
good.
You're right.
Yeah, no, it's really important, I think, because the, you know the old expression, man plans and
God laughs.
I do. Right. I do feel like that. Like the less I tried, I have tried, Marcia, over my life to plan my own success, and I have it failed. Planning my success failed, but trusting and letting it happen did not. And so I've had to, I learned very slowly, very, very slowly, but I did learn. And so whether you outline or not, there's something operative in the creative process that is beyond your mental knowing. And when it fires up, baby, trust it. Trust it.
Absolutely.
Right.
Absolutely. Absolutely. You do, you know, you can never ignore your gut. It tells you, you know, and when you get that inspiration, you have to go with it and feel free to go with it and have the confidence to trust it. And I agree with you, planning. Oh, you know, I swear to you, I have given up planning.
Oh, have you?
Trying so very hard. Yeah, it doesn't work.
Yeah.
It doesn't work.
Yeah, well,
I can't
even
plan dinner.
You see, but that's if you're like an A student type person and you're really hardworking, you like to do a good job, and you want to really, you know, cross all your T's and dot all your I's, the plan is very appealing, but it has its limitations. It has its limitations.
Yeah.
And
you know what?
And life is kind, ultimately, if you let it be.
Yeah, and that's why, you know, there's a difference between preparing and planning. Planning, you know, right? There's one, you do want to be prepared. So you want to be as smart as you can be. And you want to give everything your best shot and pull out all the stops and go for it, so to speak.
Right.
And preparing to do that, whatever it takes for you to do that, everybody has their own process. That's cool. But you can't let the preparation turn into an ironclad plan that that locks your vision in one path. That's where it, you know, you prepare with your mind open to anything that might come.
That's right. You can't plan a conversation, for instance.
We didn't plan this
one. No, I didn't. I you know, and by the way, I used to write my questions down, but then I realized my questions were based on who I thought the author would be instead of who they actually were. And I wouldn't know until I met them. So I had to stop writing them down and just trust that we'd have something interesting to say. And once again, on a perfect note, we did have something interesting to say. This has been a great conversation, Marcia.
This
I
has been
say.
Wonderful, Bill. It's a kudos to you and to you trusting your gut and knowing that you are phenomenal at this because it totally works. Yep.
Well, thank you. And
fantastic.
I have time for one more question. I get to ask all my authors this, and I want to ask it to you. So here we go. Finish this sentence. If writing has taught me, just writing, if writing has taught me anything, it's taught me what?
To trust my gut.
Yeah, it has taught you that.
I think it has.
Yeah, even more than before you were a writer.
Oh, yeah. Oh yeah. I mean, there's a certain way in which, to me, writing a book is like stepping off a cliff. You know?
Yeah. No, it is.
You don't know.
No, you don't.
What happens
you
next?
Don't know.
You just have to trust.
Yeah. Oh, good. Taught you to trust. Well, that's a good thing to learn. We learn it eventually. Maybe some of us learn it when we're young, some of us when we're a little older. But we learn it one way or the other. Well, Marsha, okay, but everybody, it's called Blood Defense. It is a page turner. It is good stuff. And you can probably get it for sure on Amazon and some bookstores, but it's awesome. Get it, read it, enjoy it. Marsha, good luck with the next book. I know there's another one coming out in November, December. When's it coming out?
November, Moral Defense.
Wow. All right. Well, yeah. Congratulations and good luck.
Thank you so very much. It's been a pleasure.
My pleasure. Thank you. Well, everybody, yes, trust. Oh, I cannot emphasize enough how correct Ms. Clark is. You must trust. Must trust. Something's going to happen on that page that you didn't predict, and that'll be the good stuff. Okay, well, I will be back next week talking to, I believe, Nigel Wellington. Oh, that's going to be interesting. We're going to talk about mindfulness. That'll be good. Until then, go out and do something you love.